Blog Talk Radio.
Doug Kelly, your host. I'm here with my good friend and co-host Grant Rubendunst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, everybody. Another week. It'll be Thanksgiving. Imagine that. Time's just flying by.
Yeah, and we finally get a night off, huh, Grant?
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Hardest working guys in paranormal internet radio.
Yeah, that's right.
Not a doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just a couple of housekeeping things before we get into our program tonight. Don't forget that this coming Monday and Tuesday night, we have that live investigation broadcast. So if you're available later that evening, we'd love to have you join us in. If you're a member, there's no cost to it. If you're not a member, it's just a $10 donation for both nights. We're going to be going at least 2 to 3 hours each evening, and we're going to be in the Cedar Key area. Now, just for some of you who are familiar with Cedar Key, Florida, it's not a hotel. This is an interesting investigation that includes, well, where we're going to be. There have been Bigfoot sightings, UFO sightings, haunting and parapsychological activity, and we've even got a couple of abductees that are going to be there with us as investigators. So it should be an interesting couple of evenings. Our own Gregory Kent will be there. I know we'll be doing table tipping probably each night, and if you've never seen one of those, that's really interesting and fascinating to watch and even more fascinating to be a part of. So join us. Go to paranexus.org for more information. And one other thing, too, we just got a little less than 2 weeks until our membership dues increase. So if you're not a member yet and you want to get in on the lower membership dues, now's the time to do it. We'd love to have you as a member. A lot of benefits, including web hosting and a lot of information that is in the forums that's accessible to members. So take a look at paranexus.org. Now tonight, if you have any questions, please feel free to join us in the chat room. If you want to call in, you can certainly do that too. The number is there on your screen, 347-945-7799. You can also use that click to talk button on your computer screen if you have a headset. And we will take your calls there. Tonight, we have Dr. John Turner with us. We refer to him as Jack by his request. Dr. Turner is a neurosurgeon in Hawaii and an interesting guy, great storyteller, and we're actually proud to have him on the show. Welcome, Jack.
Oh, thank you, fellas. It's my pleasure to be here with you this evening.
Nice to have you with us tonight.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting things, you know, and of course, Jack, you know, I have just met while working on this project that you yanked me into, and I'm just kidding you there. It's been interesting, and, you know, tell us a little bit about your work. Tell the audience a little bit about you, your background, and you know, eventually how you got into this area of paranormal issues.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. You know, I was a pretty conventional guy, kind of grounded in science. I'd always planned to be an aeronautical engineer. And at Ohio State University, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, the Buckeye town. And I thought always I wanted to design planes and rockets and all that stuff. Well, I got switched somehow, strangely enough, into a field called engineering physics, which is the applied application of theoretical physics. And then I decided that after getting a Bachelor of Science in that field, I would get a PhD in physics. So I was on the usual track, taking all the coursework, and I was about ready to sit for the general exam. I had a molecular spectroscopy, a research position all set up. Everything was ready to go until someone handed me the book about Edgar Cayce, The Sleeping Prophet by Jess Stern. And it's one of those books, yeah, I know you fellows have had a book where you read it cover to cover and then you turn around and read it again because it's so astounding. That's what happened to me. I said, now wait a minute. How could this man of average intelligence lay down on a couch with a secretary sometimes, her name was Turner, by the way, who would open a letter and say, dear Mr. Cayce, you know, I'm suffering from this and this, that. And he would say, this entity needs to take the juice of this, the bark of that, and work on the karmic consequence of this. And his cure rate was a reported 85% with medical conditions.
Wow.
So I said, now, here's something I'm interested in. There's some type of a spiritual world or another dimension, and it was just fascinating to me. And I switched immediately. I left the physics department, and I decided I would pursue a course in metaphysics. Well, in Columbus, Ohio, back in those days, it was difficult to do that. There was nobody teaching metaphysics, no degrees granted. And I said, well, I guess I'll go to medical school and study the mind. So that's what I did. I walked over to the College of Medicine. I said, look, what do I have to do to go to medical school? Never thought about it before.
Yeah.
They said, well, you need a year of organic chemistry. And, you know, it had been 10 years since I took the regular college in organic chemistry. But I took a year of that, came back, and I said, now what? And they said, well, I guess that's it. So I got in, planning to be a psychiatrist so I could study the mind. And then neurosurgery just popped in, and the next thing you know, I was given a place in their program at Ohio State. Halfway through medical school, I was all set to be a brain surgeon. So went through all that, and finally I came to Hawaii, gentlemen, to Hilo, Hawaii, which is on the Big Island of Hawaii. This island is 2.5 times as big as all the other Hawaiian islands, and I tell you, they had never had a neurosurgeon, no one to help with head trauma. So I felt there was a great need here, but also Hawaii had called me. It came up right when I had exhausted all other avenues. I couldn't find a single place I wanted my children to grow up, you know, but here was the place. And Hilo means to twist in Hawaiian, and it also means swirling vortex of fire in Japanese. And I found that part of life experiences are to learn these very carefully crafted lessons. And in my case, it appears those lessons were ones of forgiveness, that allowed me to finally move on to this unconditional love that we mentioned earlier. So that's basically me. I won't say in a nutshell, but that's me. I was able to be the only show in town here, the only show on the island, the only neurosurgeon. So I was able to become really intimately involved with the patients and families. So I was always dealing with life and death. And then in 1995, after so many amazing things had happened, it occurred to me that I should write about my experiences. And that happened through the I Ching, a computerized version of that ancient Chinese fortune-telling system. And I entered in the computer, this program, for the first time I tried it, I put, am I on the right track? And the response came through that made me realize, look, there's something very strange going on, very metaphysical, saying, yes, you have to jot these down because it may just very well help someone. And I knew it would help me to write these experiences out. So that's the story of me and the book that came out of it, a small book called Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations.
And so since you brought that up, where can they get that, our listeners?
Well, what I would recommend is a first look at the website, which is johnlturner.com, johnlturner.com, and there you'll see a beautiful website designed by my friend Martin Simmons, who also trained with me under Ed Dames in remote viewing, my friend for many years. And also, you'll see what happened when Martin agreed to research the afterlife with me almost exactly a year from today. Actually, it was November 25th of last year, and I think that's a story worth saying and how why we're talking, Doug and Grant.
Go ahead.
Has to do with what happened that day. Now, they can also read the first chapter of the book there. If they go to my blogs, I have blogs on various things lately about the H1N1 and the vaccinations, but a lot of things about dreams and waking life and everything. But they can also read the story of Martin Simmons and find out how I got interested, really, in the deep aspect of paranormal.
Why don't you talk to us about that? I know Martin was a close friend of yours.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Martin was a young fellow, 48 years old last year, and he lived in London. He had lived in the States for a while. But we had been in touch almost daily, you know, either by email or by instant messenger or what have you, and we met because of an interest in remote viewing. At that time, I planned to study under Courtney Brown in Atlanta because I didn't know where else to get trained in remote viewing in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as it would happen, one day on the chat site called Farsight Institute, Martin was there with me. And as we were talking, he suddenly entered a question. He said, if a bird was on a limb and was going to fly off, would that bird go up, down, or straight out? Well, Martin was a jokester, so I thought a joke was sure to follow. So I said, all right, what's the joke? I said, the bird will fly straight out. And then suddenly someone who had been lurking that called themselves Fox typed in, that's known as alternative remote viewing, a way to play the stock market in bonds. They said, who are you? And they said, well, I run the computers for Ed Dames. Well, to make a long story short, this led to a training spot with Ed Dames and his SciTech company. And Ed came to Hilo to teach me remote viewing during an intensive two-week course. And later, Martin took that same remote viewing course. So we stayed in touch over the years, every day, until November 25th last year. That's when a Rob Smith, who is in Australia, wrote me to say, Doctor, I've seen your website at Astrodynamics, Robert Bruce's website, and I know you'll be interested in what's taken up the last 5 years of my life, something called EVP. Well, at that time, Doug and Grant, the only thing I knew about EVP, I remembered that movie Frequency that I thought had something to do with it. But when I saw that movie 10 years ago, you know what, guys, I really didn't think much of it. I didn't pay much attention.
Mm-hmm. You thinking about white noise?
Well, not white noise. It was called Frequency.
Yeah, I remember.
Yes.
It was Ben. Yep. You remember that now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I couldn't remember what it was about, but when Rob said EVP, I'm thinking, I looked at his website. He said, I'd like to promote your book, Doctor, at an Australasian, you know, forum. And he said, think about EVP. So I started reading about it, and I said, now this is kind of interesting. This ITC, instrumental transcommunication, EVP, electronic voice phenomena. I said, Martin, look at this email. This guy in Australia. Now look, I've got a feeling that this is a sign that I should work on another book. And I said, I think maybe it should be about the afterlife. I said, now here's an electronic way we can research this. Would you be interested? You love computers and all that. He said, yeah, of course. Let's do it. Well, within days, Martin wrote me to say, you're a doctor, Jack. I've got this pain in my right side. What do you think it could be? Well, 2 months later, I was in London at his bedside. He had had surgery for cancer of the colon, metastatic to his liver, and he was riddled with tumor, and he was dying.
Wow.
The day before he died, on March 6th or 7th, I said, look, Martin, I need to ask you again. Are you interested in pursuing this research on the afterlife? He said, absolutely. And he died the next day.
Wow.
When I got back to Hilo, I carried out my promise, and I tried something called radio sweeping, which you're familiar with. I read Steve Holte's work on how to modify, you know, a simple Radio Shack armband radio so that it sweeps. And I tell you what I did. If you go to my website, on the left there are links, and one says search. You click that, and the window will open. You can type in Martin. That's my friend's name, Martin Simmons. And it'll take you to a selection where you can see the cryptic case of Martin Simmons. It explains what happened. It shows how, per Steve's instructions, you open up the radio, you cut one particular wire that leads to the circuit board, put it back together. When you turn it on, it'll start sweeping through the AM or FM bands at a rate that hardly picks up any discernible words, very rarely. But at any rate, what I did, I had a digital recorder in my hand. I turned on the radio, put it up to the speakers. I said, "Martin, are you there?" And within seconds, the strangest thing happened. This voice came back in a hello, just like he would say it with his British accent, and it sounded exactly like his voice. It was unbelievable. I played it for my wife, who knew Martin well, his wife, his daughters, and his friends, and they just couldn't believe it. The phrase over here in Hawaii is chicken skin, where you get those goosebumps, right? Because it sounded so uncannily like the way he would answer the phone.
Huh.
Well, gentlemen, to continue on, what I did at that point, I stopped all that kind of thing, and I said, let me start to study. I obtained the book by Konstantin Rudova. I started reading that. I read McCrae's book, everything I could read on EVP to try to understand what was really happening. Was this kind of an accident or what? Well, then after weeks went by, I tried it again. I set up the little radio recorder, had the speakers on, and I did it again. I said, Martin, are you there? And in this kind of staticky-like noise came another response, which was just a one-word thing, just a yes. But it was, again, a couple times repeated, just like Martin would say that. And another break in studying, and I do this two more times. And let me tell you about these two times. Again, the same question was, Martin, are you there? But this time, the response that was very clear to people who have listened was, that's the question. Now, a real skeptical person could say, well, look, you know, so those words happen to be on those frequency bands. You know, you picked it up, and that probably explains it. That I could understand. Except 2 weeks later, and 3,000 or 4,000 miles away from Hawaii in Burbank, California, in a recording studio with the cameras running, I set up the equipment again, turned on the stuff, the cameras are running, microphone is right there, and I said, Martin, are you there? And again, it came through, that's the question.
Yeah.
I would say that's kind of beyond, you know, some coincidence that would happen twice. So then I stopped. I said, look, I don't think I need any more proof that this is one way to contact maybe the afterlife, but I didn't think it was as significant as what you and I talked about earlier, Doug, this type of EVP research, not the radio sweep, but the real EVP type of stuff that many do. And this has led to many other things, but in particular, a project that I'm working with on with Viv Summers in Australia and her co-producer, Anna Reeves. Because of Viv's son's near-death experience, she really wanted to investigate the spiritual world. And it began with a documentary project called Spirit. And it led from there to another project with John of God in Brazil. As you know about the type of healing work that's done down there with full trance mediumship. And that led to a separate project, and something that we've hashed about a lot, Doug, is the fact that, is it possible, you know, that if someone ascribes to the new physics or torsion physics, that these objects that show up called orbs may very well, when they're pinpoint in size, do this microsurgery in the body that's claimed is done down there in the Casa in Brazil, where people are healed and some type of internal derangement or rearrangement goes on. So that's led to a separate project. But EVP, I think, may be the most valid proof, a scientific type of proof that there is in it.
Yep,
I agree with that. We've talked about that. It's meaningful. I mean, look at
the experience you've had. I mean, to have the same expression on two different occasions in two different places. You know, that's...
I agree. It's like when McCrae took his equipment to Spain, you know, where all those radio stations, he tried a radio sweep. There was no English coming through, but yet the responses came through in English. So that was his way of saying, look, it's not just these random phrases. I mean, come on, all the stations were broadcasting in Spanish. So there's a lot to it, but... The project of the ladies in Australia is called Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. And right now they're presenting this to a major network such as the BBC, Discovery Channel, but National Geographic has shown the most interest. And in January they'll present their final package to them of people involved, such as yourself, Doug, people like you know, Raymond Moody, Gary Schwartz, all kind of investigators of different aspects of the afterlife. And we're going to start this out. I think they've suggested we begin by first having 2 out of 13 segments, hour-long shows, starting with consciousness. Because it appears that if we can understand consciousness and we can explain it to the best of our combined abilities, everything else, the EBT, reincarnation, near-death experiences, everything will follow from that. And had we talked, gentlemen, maybe just a few months ago, and you had asked me, well, what about consciousness? Is the brain responsible for consciousness? I would have said yes, like most neuroscientists still say. But now I've changed. I've learned a lot. I've met a lot of people. I've studied. And I see now it is consciousness that produces the brain. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it certainly does. And, you know, I think, you know, what I find really remarkable, Jack, is the fact that I've studied the near-death phenomena for a number of years, and I'm just stunned how recently it's become much more acceptable in the medical community. I just saw Dr. Sanjay Gupta on CNN do a little mini-series on it. And I think the most fascinating part is that everybody now, we're going to, number one, have to redefine what death is, and then number two, redefine or try to define consciousness. And if indeed, I think Dr. Peter Fenwick, who does work with the International Near-Death Association or Society, you know, I think was basically saying the same thing, that we're basically kind of like a biological filtering system or just a housing for the consciousness.
Well, let me tell you, as we speak now, there are 83 people involved in this project. Peter Fenwick is one. Mm-hmm. Tim Van Ommel is another. The list is probably anyone you can think of who has studied this. And what I find very interesting, consciousness, there's Stanley Krippner, there's Charles Tart, and many more. But the people I talk with about this, you know, we have these discussions. They're always, for the most part, friendly, of course, but everyone has opinions on consciousness. But the key thing about the whole thing is, when I ask them, look, would you say that waking life as we know it is merely a dream? The answer is almost uniformly yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, of a radio show similar to these that I've been on because of this book only, the third one was Coast to Coast, out of 36 or more, right? Coast to Coast came up early. And as I was preparing for that, trying to listen to how George Norrie interviews people, one Saturday, when cutting the grass, I paused the little lawn tractor and I listened, and he asked Mary Ellen Guiley, he said, listen, don't you believe that waking life as we know it is merely a dream? And people will leave our dream through death. And she said, of course, this is what I think. And I realized this is what I've been saying for so many years, and we're going to leave it through death, and we're likely going to just say, shake our head and say, what was that? Because we'll be into the next phase, the next type of dream. And this area that Victor Zaman refers to as the glut, meaning this overabundance of those who may not realize they're in this transition period, is ever increasing. And the question is why, and how does this happen? And as you both know, there's all kind of ways that people go to help release these people. The Monroe, what was it, the Explorer tapes to aid with that, and there's earthbound entity retrieval techniques and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I found out some fascinating things that I think will interest you guys. Do you remember a machine in high school physics or chemistry lab, always on the table, called a Wimshurst machine? And it had two large, maybe 12-inch glass or plexiglass discs that would counter-rotate. And they had little aluminum, you know, windows on it, and brushes would pick up the static electricity. And then you crank that thing up to speed, and a spark would finally jump between electrodes. Do you remember something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Sorts.
Yeah, as long as I knew about that, and a few years ago when I was interested in Tesla stuff, I thought I'd buy that because I liked all kind of sparks and stuff, right? And Edmund Scientific and other places sell them. But you know what? I never realized who built that machine. And the man to really experiment with it was named Dr. Carl Wicklund. this may or may not ring a bell, but in 1924, the psychiatrist began using that machine with 14 30-inch glass counter-rotating plates in a big cabinet. And here's what he did. A schizophrenic patient hearing voices and so forth, he would bring them in his office, sit them down, connect them up to these paddles, and his wife would come in and sit next to the patient. When he cranked that thing up and gave a good spark, suddenly something would leap out of that patient and into his wife, usually with an expression like, "What are you trying to do to me?" It was an attached entity that he was able to then do the psychotherapy in his wife's body and say, "Look, you had no business attaching to this person. You were in that transition state. You're dead and you don't realize it. And my job is to get you out of there and into the light." He did this for 30 years. His book, 30 Years Among the Dead, explains all his work. And I found that was fascinating. Now, here's the reason. What did it all mean? The way I put it together was this. Dr. George G. Ritchie, who was giving a lecture when Raymond Moody was a medical student, talked about his near-death experience. And he was in an Army field hospital at age 20. He was actually died there, and he suddenly saw his body on the gurney and covered up. And the next thing you know, he was able to leave that building and will himself anywhere at tremendous speed. And as he investigated what was going on, he saw that where he was looking, there were just too many people. And as he closely observed, he saw people walk through each other without knowing they were there, this displaced souls. And in a bar, he saw people, real people, drinking and having fun, but they all had this golden aura about them. But there were these other entities who were obviously there trying to beg for drinks, hollering and swearing and reaching and grabbing, but their hand going through shot glasses, not able to communicate. But when someone drank enough, they got up and fell, passed out, there would be a crack that would appear in that aura, and suddenly one of those entities would lickety-split, disappear inside, attaching to that person.
Huh.
So it all started to make sense. And then it appears that people who have never thought about death, never discussed death, right, who may say, "Look, like the beer commercial, get all the gusto you can because this is one go at it, and it lights out." When they find themselves in that position, they may not know what's going on. It's the knowing about death that figuratively severs that silver cord we hear so much about but we rarely see. So that's what led me to have an interest in all that. As I said, it's led to our conversation today.
Glad you're
there.
No, we're fascinated by your.
Yeah, sorry.
You have a spellbound.
Yeah, it's such fascinating stuff because it makes one wonder about whether or not the purpose of us being here in this form is to be a total learning experience about the journey. And it also seems that there's that part of that purpose is so that you become more evolved or more enlightened to be part of some sort of collective consciousness. So it's fascinating because I think that we're getting closer and closer to trying to explain something we have never been able to do before. And it seems like the research that was done in the near-death studies over the past, well, since the late or mid-1980s, has finally led us down this path. Although that's where, if when you referred to Dr. Pim van Lommel, his work over there in the Netherlands, I can't remember the exact location, that they did with cardiac patients, I think it was in 2001 or it was in The Lancet, was a fascinating research study.
Yeah,
absolutely
exactly.
Fascinating.
And we're fortunate to have him as part of the project, too, so he can discuss that type of work. And what I think is happening, I think that the timing for this is so appropriate because of this 2012 business. And sometimes I'm asked, what comes after 2012? And you know my response is 2013. Mm-hmm. However, there's a but to this. I think the but is that it's making people aware that it looks like a change is coming, finally. And if you think about everything that's changing, and even though the more it changes, the more it's the same thing, that's a kind of a Zen phrase, there's something happening. And I think it's a waking up. These economic times, people are trying to figure out, well, what is going on? And I read an article earlier today, you know, you can't afford to die anymore because no one can afford the burial costs. So, but if you stay alive, it's hard to live too with everything so terrible. So people are trying to find out, what does this mean? And here's what I think it means. One of the famous spiritists, Chico Xavier, said, selfishness is what keeps us from realizing that we're all brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And I think this project, Beyond Reasonable Doubt, is taking that to the next level, saying, more importantly, we're all one. And as you alluded to a little while ago, there's something happening that we're constantly interfacing with the zero-point field, let's call it, or some people would call it the Akashic Records or the collective unconscious. I think we're constantly uploading, downloading all the time. And as my friend Dr. Taylor has put it, we've been mind-programmed to think we're separate when we're really all one. And when we realize that, we're going to start respecting everybody and everything.
Well, we're certainly all connected. I mean, and you know, that really spills over into anomalous research, because you know, one of the paths that we're exploring, and I'm sure others are too, is the impact or the role that this collective consciousness plays in phenomena. You know, like parapsychology, you know, PK events, psychokinesis events, where things move of their own volition. I mean, I mentioned table tipping at the outset, that we participate in research quite a bit, and it's fascinating. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating to sit at that table, to participate in it, and when you've got, you know, 6-8 people around the table, and that table moves as if by itself. Now, I don't doubt that there's some ideomotor effect going on here with people, but the thing that fascinates me the most is that it moves in concert. Everybody's, you know, if you don't have 6 or 8 people moving it in different directions, the table moves in concert, in sync. It's like a collective consciousness is somehow, you know, at work here. It's really cool.
That's an interesting point, Doug. Do you think the table would tip if all those assembled said, look, I don't think not anything's going to happen. This is ridiculous. Do you think it would still work? So it's a state of a personal consciousness, a collective consciousness that allows it to happen. You would agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's also through the unity. Maybe we also feel some sort of parity or we can kind of collectively use the belief to unconsciously harness some sort of psychokinetic energy. I've often wondered about that, because you know, I think that it's amazing the power which you just talked about, Jack, what the power of belief can do. I mean, as a physician trained as a physician, you know, if a patient believes in you, he's going to get better. Or at least sometimes the possibility is
powerful.
You know, absolutely, the power of belief, and that for that matter, somebody could be reading tea leaves or tarot cards, but if they believe that what you're going to prognosticate for them is going to help, you said
refresh my memory. You know, there was a famous case, and I forget what it was called. I have a feeling it was a spirit entity named John, but these people who hold the seances completely made up the history of someone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Completely fabricated a history, and then they were able to receive messages and transmissions in their seances with this made-up entity. Do you remember the name of that? I just can't think of what that was called.
No, I don't offhand.
No.
But it was fascinating when Elton Taylor told me, you know, there's some very interesting things that can go on. Now, here's the thing. You know, since you brought it up, I'd like to discuss something very interesting and get your opinion, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Let's say, right now we're talking, right? And let's assume for a minute that we're doing this conversation in what we would call a dream, right? We're all dreaming this right now, and I'm talking to you fellows, and in the dream I have this question to ask you, okay? I'm driving my car, and I'm talking on the Bluetooth headset to you, and I've just passed a red brick building. Now, my question to you, that this is only a dream now, we're talking in a dream, but here's my question. I'm 2 blocks past that building. Is that building still there as far as my dream scenario? Or would it only be there if I turn around and drive back that way? How would you answer that question?
It was only there at the time that you passed it, and it's gone now.
So now, Okay. Yeah, because it would be a terrible waste of energy in a dream to have it always there just in case the dream turned around, right? Wouldn't it be strange?
Yeah.
But now, what about we're talking now, but this is what we think is waking life. And we're actually talking, and I'm on the phone to you, and I passed a red brick building, and I ask you the same question. Is it still there? Or will it only be there if I need it when I turn around and go back?
Hmm. Yep.
One of those philosophical questions.
Well, it's also about perception. You know,
yeah.
It's totally about perception. And I mean, when you start talking about perception, then everybody's perception is totally different. And you know, that's the thing that's so mind-boggling, because here we are. If you look at us from a physiological standpoint and genetically, there's the difference between each different group of humans on this planet isn't that significant. And then at the same time, socially, we're divided. We lose sight of the fact of our connection. We have this huge disconnect, and that's the part that when you become enlightened or educated, that you realize we're all brothers. But I think there's a lot of people wander around that get caught up in a lot of things that get them bogged down, and they can't ever reach that point. And that's the tragedy, that we can't see that we're part of this wonderful, beautiful tapestry. It's just so unfortunate.
Yep. That's the way it appears to work. You know, in the cortex of the brain, there are estimated 100 billion neurons or nerve cells.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that cortex is divided up between the main hemispheres of the brain and the cerebellum, the small brain that's tucked beneath, behind. Now, the thing is, those neurons, as you know, interconnect in all kind of strange patterns, memories form, all kind of things happen. But the number of possible connections they could make is estimated at 10 to the 75th power.
Wow.
Now, that's a number greater than all the known particles in this universe. I mean, every single atom, electron, photon, all that.
So infinite, for all intents and purposes.
So all of this can be rendered pretty easily in a way, but there's something beyond the brain, like the mind. Now,
so are we a microcosm of the universe? Is our brain a microcosm of the universe? Are we trying to know ourselves?
It's like a sword that cannot cut itself, right?
Yeah.
Difficult to even contemplate these things. So I've been thinking about Thomas Campbell's work and the work of others like Claude Swanson and other physicists who have been studying this. And are you familiar with Claude Swanson's The Synchronized Universe? 2 years ago he wrote about he's an MIT physicist and very astute man. And he's talked a lot about torsion energy, subtle energy, and so forth. And then Thomas Campbell is also a physicist who wrote a three-volume set called My Big Toe, Toe meaning Theory of Everything.
Yeah.
And I think with all of the people who have written about consciousness and studied it for lives, in Campbell's case, 35 years, there's a way that it can be understood, and all of these things will make sense, like parallel universes and all these things seem to make sense. But the bottom line is, I think, that none of this is real. It's all a very interesting play of energy, and we can, by changing our consciousness, allow those things to happen, like table tipping and so forth. Let me give you a simple example of something that happened just yesterday to me. And you might have an explanation for this, I don't know, but my friend Ernie Morgan, he and I have talked about consciousness for months.
He's listening, by the way.
Oh, he is. How do you know that? This is some psychic stuff.
Because I know all things except for those things which I do not know.
Well, let me tell you about Ernie. The other day I was trying to teach him a Hawaiian expression for, you know, just hang loose, take it easy. And I had bought my friend Martin a T-shirt that says, if can, the next line said, if no can, no can. And what that means to local people, you know, it's another way of saying, listen, you know, if you can handle this thing or if you can do it, fine. If not, don't sweat it. That's what it means, right? So get this. I was in a supermarket yesterday, and I'm walking down an aisle, one of the aisles, and at the end there was a man and a woman. They were doing some shopping, but what was coming down the aisle to me on the floor with a can of cranberry sauce, right? Just rolling towards me.
Really?
And I couldn't believe it. I picked that up, and I looked at those people, and I showed, they looked surprised, like they hadn't been near that. And then Ernie said to me, when I told him what happened, you know what he said?
What?
No can. Wow. You're right. What
oh,
does
wow.
this be? Because I tell you, I wasn't going to cook any Thanksgiving dinner. I tell you, I've changed a little bit. That's not really a holiday that, you know, I celebrate. If I was American, Native American, I wouldn't like this holiday, right?
Yeah, really.
So now here comes this cranberry sauce. So maybe I will make a dessert or something, right? But in the checkout line later was one of those two people. And I asked the lady, I said, look, now this can. I said, did you by any chance knock this off? She said, we weren't even near it. She said, when we looked up, it was rolling to you. I said, okay. That's a small paranormal thing. But there's some big paranormal things that happen to us all when our consciousness is at the right place where we can start to appreciate, or maybe, should I say, manufacture these things. Don't you agree?
Well, maybe by the fact that we observe it, we make it happen.
Yes, that's right. And so you're talking about something like that famous Schrödinger cat experiment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the
Schrödinger's cat neither
yeah,
dead nor alive.
Collapses to a wave function, you know, the wave function collapses once you make the observation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of my point about the red brick building. Now, maybe that mm-hmm. building's there after I pass it for someone else who needs it, but for me, it's not really there until I have to interact with it again, and then it kind of is created. That seems the way Amit Goswami, who was also part of this project, would speak of the quantum nature of reality, right, which appears to be valid, and it's quite interesting. So, you know, I was talking with Tom Campbell about these things, about their red brick thing, and it seemed simple. Then I put this question to him. I said, but what about this? What about when I rolled it? I have a telescope. It's a 14-inch Meade catastrophic scope. I roll it out from this one garage at night, you know, and I fire it up. You know, it does the GPS thing, locks onto these satellites, and then it will zero in on whatever I dial in. So I said, well, Tom, tell me this. These stars, which we can calculate are light years and light years away, are you saying that they just sprung into existence because I needed to interact with them, and then when I put that scope back, for all purposes, as long as I'm in the house, they're gone? And he said, that's the way it works.
Huh.
That sounds kind of fantastic, doesn't it?
It does.
That's probably the way it does work.
But it makes such a wonderful statement about us, about the nature of our imagination and the nature of consciousness. That's one of the most hopeful things I could ever, as strange as it may seem, that strikes me is just almost hopeful and inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you this, Grant. I was standing in our driveway here in Hawaii with my friend Martin on one of his visits, and we were out there, and we looked up to see the constellation Orion.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly he said to me, Jack, did you ever think that the reason we can see these stars are because they somehow are involved with human communication? Now, you know, that was kind of profound to suddenly say we're out of the blue. And so it was so strange because on the night he died, at the foot of his bed, there was a pegboard, and I put these thumbtacks in that Orion constellation, right? And then when I think about the Egyptians and the Great Pyramid,
mm-hmm.
how it was aligned with those stars of Orion's belt. I think about William Henry, another man who was part of this project, and his Stargate theory, and how maybe through the pineal we can use a light body to connect with those stars. It all is starting slowly to dawn on me that there may be some really deep significance to the whole thing. And that brings to mind, why are pineal glands calcified? Now, you've probably heard of this in neurosurgery. It was common teaching that we can look at a skull x-ray and see if that gland has shifted left or right. That was an early indication of some blood clot in the days before CTs and MRIs. Now it's only historical significance, but never, ever did anyone ever say, this is why it calcifies. And there's a lot about fluoride, fluoridation of the water, and other things that may be, as strange as this sounds, may be some way and attempt to keep our collective consciousness at a level where we can work and be the sheep in this world.
Well, be part of the matrix then.
The sheeple.
Descartes may have been completely right that the pineal is the trapdoor to the soul. And that's the way we enter these physical bodies, because Rick Strassman, in his theory of DMT in the pineal gland, said that if indeed this chemical, dimethyltryptamine, is produced by the pineal, then it's released into an area of the brain called the quadrigeminal plate. And that's like four small mounds with connections for hearing and vision, and it produces that white light experience. And given intravenously, DMT takes one to a parallel universe right away, almost instantaneously, right? But the pineal gland and the sex organs are manifest at 49 days of gestation. And isn't it strange that the Buddhists believe that when someone dies, they remain in this earthly plane for 49 days, right?
Yeah.
So maybe when the spirit enters the body and leaves the body through that pineal, this could be the timing, and it's all starting to make sense now, that we may be under some great, massive mind control. I don't know about who or whom.
And, of course, the challenge is when you're in the bardo, is recognizing the fact that you're in the bardo.
You mentioned that, Dan, and it's excellent that you mentioned it, because Dr. Taylor, Eldon Taylor, who now has Hay House radio show called Provocative Enlightenment, had for many years a Contact 12 radio show, which was called Mind Matters. Eldon had studied the mind for over 25 years. And I knew that when I saw his show coming up, arranged by the publicist, I said, I better start knowing what I'm talking about when it comes to the mind, because for sure he's going to ask me, Dr. Turner, where is the mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, we developed a great friendship. And one of his listeners called in and said, Dr. Taylor, we've heard that there can be some meaningful speech in baby babble, that babble talk, when it's reversed and the speed is changed. What do you know about that? So Eldon knew a lot about reverse speech. He has patented devices for using reverse speech for learning, relaxation, and all that. But he asked me, he said, Jack, now, what do you think? In the Alzheimer's patients, who some are reduced to that babble speech stage, and by that, all they can say is something like this. It sounds like, you know, sounds like that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, what if that was reversed? Could it be that, you know, as we age, and then even with an Alzheimer's patient, we return to that infantile stage, and I saw my mother go through that as she suffered from Alzheimer's. He said, could there be meaningful speech in that? Well, that led to acceptance of a paper that Eldon submitted that he's going to present at the ISSSEEM. That's the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine. Now, you're probably familiar, they meet once a year in kind of a remote place, maybe in the West, Midwest, and people come there who have studied consciousness. They don't bring their families. They come to talk about what's happening. And the current president is Stanley Krippner. The paper was accepted, and here's the thing. That conference was started by a Dr. Elmer Green, who wrote a book called The Ozaki Book of the Dead, subtitle, Alzheimer's is Not What You Think It Is.
Mm.
And what he found was that his wife, who suffered from severe Alzheimer's, was in two worlds. One was, as we know this one, and the other was in that bardo that you mentioned, Grant. And he found a way that he could enter that space, that dimension, and communicate with his wife while she was there. That's the crazy thing. So as soon as you mentioned bardo, I realized this is all hooked up with this project with Alzheimer's reverse speech. And by the way, this week we did our first recordings here at the Life Care Center in Hilo, where we're going to do a study that will last the next 2 or 3 months, and we'll be able to analyze this and say yes. And what's even more astounding that you gentlemen will really love is that in our first case of a 5-minute clip of this babble speech, not only did we extract meaningful information when reversed and slowed, but in a normal forward listening, Ingrid was able to pick up some EVP utterances, just like there are some entity attachments to someone suffering from severe Alzheimer's.
And that's Dr. Ingrid Erwin, who's a paranexus
board member that he's referring to.
Well, it certainly makes you wonder if the physiological changes that occur in the brain when a person has Alzheimer's or dementia, if they somehow contribute to that whole convoluted or the changes in obviously they do contribute to the changes in consciousness, but on how many different levels?
You know, I think what it is, watching my mother in the last 5 years, I was able to get her over here to live with me in Hawaii. And I was really fortunate because the situation was such that I could take care of her. My wife allowed me to wash every item of clothes, to change every diaper, to lift her into the bath, to do everything. So I was able to pay back the most important of debts that you can imagine. I mean, that's really fortunate.
Bravo, Jack. Bravo.
At the same time, I had another son, my fifth child, who was born at the time she came over, and I watched them pass in life, going different directions, but passing through the same phases. You know, he started out on milk and liquids and then solid food, and got out of the diapers and the pants, and she went just the other way.
Mm.
And to see them interact and have a chance that they passed in this life was amazing. So I think Alzheimer's was a slow type of death, such that one could maybe spend time in other realities and other realms, you know, and also still be here with us.
Or maybe perhaps examine their life. It's almost like, you know, it's interesting that you mention that because I recall my mother, my wife's grandmother, who also suffered from Alzheimer's. And one of the things she would have, as you're well aware of, Jack, these people have periods of anxiety and distress and sometimes can get pretty agitated. In her particular case, one of the fears with her that would come through all the time was she felt that she had to go find her children. So it was maybe perhaps if what you're saying or what they're theorizing is true is maybe it's we have to go through trial. Maybe it's almost like a little, internal learning process that things that we didn't work through well on our journey, we work through again all over. I don't know. It's just,
I think here's what I think the way it works is that, you know, there is this kind of spiritual, let's call it dimension, or like Dottie Boone, is a lady involved in this earthbound energy retrievement system, right? They've practiced, you know, lady named Corky Whitaker has done this in San Jose for years in helping animals and others get into that light when they're having a little difficulty. And I wish we had time I could explain a remote viewing session in which...
We'll get you back on.
I was given a blind target and it turned out to be a friend of mine who had died 3 days earlier and what his situation was. You know, but there are people who are kind of stuck in that dimension. Here's what I think happens. I think in whatever you call it, the glut, Dottie calls it the waiting room. I think of it as changing trains, like a train station, right? We're going to the next thing.
Yeah.
I think we're able to review everything. You know, we reach a level where we can do that. And we can say, well, now, what's next? What did we learn? What do we need to do? And, of course, that life review of the near-death experience seems to suggest this is the case. And people like Dr. Newton, right, Michael Newton, and others who do this regression therapy, not into just the past life, but into that stage between lives, there is one of this learning and teaching that goes on. So I think we're able to craft this very carefully, and what we need to tune up now as we go through this repeated experience and perfecting our spirit, right? But one thing that I learned that I think was really critical, and I'd like to finish by telling you what that was. This is really important. I went to work on a project with Director Nick Mendoza. It's called Quantum Wisdom. And Dr. Taylor was with me, and this was in L.A., and then Whitley Strieber and his wife, Ann Strieber. And as we were talking that first night, they asked us just to discuss consciousness and the afterlife and just kind of start talking to see what came up. Well, they had some very great things to say. But then, when it got to be my turn, I said, look, I said, I'm presenting this stage play in my life back in Hilo, a small little town, Hilo, Hawaii, maybe 80,000 people, 70,000. I said, but look, this play, I said, is going to be great if I can fill these other three spots. And I said, now I have a spot open for a woman who plays my mother. And she, you know, she's such a nice lady. She blushed and smiled. And she said, well, I'm not much of an actress. I said, yeah, but but if you could do a good job, it'll be great. I said, would you do that for me, Ann? And she said, well, I guess I could. I said, now, Whitley, I got a spot for you, but Whitley, you're going to steal everything I ever had. He said, well, I don't want to. I said, listen, I know you're not an actor, but if you would do it and do a good job, this is going to be a great play. And then before he could answer, I turned to Eldon. I said, Eldon, no, my friend, you're going to do a similar thing, but you're going to do it in a very clever way. You're going to force me to go through bankruptcy, not once, but twice. I said, you'll have it, Eldon. So when I put my hand in my pocket, most of the time I kept coins that add up to less than a dollar. He said, well, Jack, I said, no, but would you do it for me, Eldon? He said, I guess I could. And then I said, no, here's the point. Let's say it did happen. Let's say we really did put on the play, and you were congratulated, patted on the back, all three of you, because you did such a great job, they loved it. I said, and here we are 2 years later. I said, now listen, did you expect me to be upset with any of you? He said, well, no, no. I said, that's my point. What I learned from the Forever Family Foundation, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, was the fact that that's how we get here. We reincarnate in a soul family. The people we're dealing with are part of that, and somebody had to agree to come here and play the bad guy. How else are we going to learn unless someone puts us through this? So we got to love them for it, because if they can get us to this point of total forgiveness, we can release that once and for all and get on with the key reason we're here, which is to learn and practice unconditional love. Does that make sense, Gary?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you think about the near-death experiences, and as you were talking about, Jack, one of the questions that a lot of people claim that they're asked is, what have you done for your fellow man?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Right. And the last thing I want to say about that is I heard Eldon talking with Dr. Newton on the radio, his radio show Tuesday, Hay House Radio. He brought up the great movie, Meet Joe Black. And he said that, you know, it's the story, you know, with Brad Pitt and Anthony Hopkins of a very wealthy billionaire guy who really lived an exemplary life. Everyone loved him. And at the end, at age 65, you know, death comes to take him. It's based on the screenplay, Death Takes a Holiday, right? But this death that comes in the form of a heart attack to take him decides, well, wait a minute, there's something very special about this guy. Let me hang around for a while and see what it's like. And then at the end, he goes through this. At his birthday party, gigantic party, and he knows he's got to leave with death. No one else realizes what's going on. He looks at all his friends, a couple hundred people gathered. Band is playing, and everybody's quiet, and they want to hear him talk, and he listens. I'm going to break this wish when I blew out the candle and tell you what it was. He said, I just wish your lives can be as full and as happy as mine. And then as he looks out on the crowd, he says, 65 years. Don't they go by in a blink? And then as they walk off together, right at the end, he stops and he turns to Brad Pitt and he says, should I be afraid? And with a slight smile, this death in the form of Brad Pitt looks at him and says, not a man like you. And that's what we've got to get to the point where we have no regrets. We know we've tried to do everything we can in the best possible way. And then we go to that next level, and we're learning more, and we're able to continue until we reach that point, or maybe we don't have to keep going through this.
Good stuff, Jack. We're down to the last minute, and we're going to have to wrap it up. Time goes when you're having fun, and we'll be sure to have you back on. If you didn't get it at the beginning, please visit Jack's website, johnlturner.com, and his book there. Can you repeat the title of your book, Jack, please?
Yes, it's Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations is the title of the book.
Great. We just don't have the time, but go take a look at that and pick up that book and read. There's a lot of good information on Jack's site as well, johnlturner.com. Jack, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We hope to have you back on sometime. Interesting.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. My pleasure.
Yeah.
Oh, we'd love to have you back, Jack. It's been a real pleasure.
And to our listeners, don't forget we have a live investigation coming up this Monday and Tuesday. If you're a Paranexus member, there's no cost to it. We'd love to have you join. Go to paranexus.org. If you're not a member, it's just $10 for both nights. We're going to be looking at some Bigfoot stuff, UFO stuff, and haunting stuff. So more information on, on Paranexus.org. And listeners, we really appreciate you joining us tonight and every week. Next week we will not have a show as it's Thanksgiving, and most people will probably be with their families, so we're going to take the night off and then pick up the show the week after that, where we will talk about stuff that happens on the live investigation. So please join us. Everybody, thanks so much. Have a great night.
And happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Good night.